Sometimes when you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff, about that there's so much that has been passed down to their own techniques. And then so much of the history we have is because it's been fantastic enough that
All right, here we are. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped that you're with us. We are going to jump back in to our financial discussion that we started last week.
And I will tell you, after the show, tons of people messaged me wanting more depth into what we talked about. So beautiful. We hit something.
Beautiful. Well, to paint a picture, most people, I don't know what the statistic is, but vast majority live paycheck to paycheck.
For sure.
They're doing very little investing. Most people are barely saving anything. The little savings that they do have is for emergencies, and I use that term very loosely. And so most people are paycheck to paycheck. They're, if it doesn't come in, they're in trouble. And anybody who's doing any type of investing is either set up in their corporate 401k and it happens automatically, they don't have to think about it, and so it's automated, which is good. But they're not necessarily personally invested in personal finance. They're not thinking, well, you know, how do I do this? They're not day trading. They're not, there's a very small sliver of people that are saying, you know what, I want to be hands-on with my investments. Most people are happy to stick it in a 401k and just let it ride. And
nail
then hopefully
it in.
They have, most people are very happy to do that, especially if you have good matching with your company and stuff like that. And there's a whole bunch of those things. And then you get into, you know, should I have 1K, should I have a Roth IRA, like what do I have? And that is not my area of expertise. I know Dave Ramsey has certain recommendations, other people have recommendations, but what I kind of want to get into, I want to get into a little bit of a hypothetical that's not quite a hypothetical. It's actually my wife and I've been dialoguing through how do we do this. So we're actually going to open a separate bank account that will just be for investing, so that way we don't mix and match with all of our bills. Will continue to, you know, run our spreadsheet, make sure we're hitting our four walls and paying stuff off and all that good stuff. But with the investment side of things, we're trying to figure out, what do we want to invest in? What do we know? That stuff that you talk about, what are you passionate about? What do you want to learn about? B, should we? So I have a 403B, which is a 401k for clergy, and other people can have it as well. But, the same kind of principle. I've never put anything into it. Churches I've worked at have put into it. We have not put anything into it in probably a decade or so. So it sat there, and the stock market goes up, down, whichever way. I think it's set up to 80-20, so it's a little bit aggressive because I'm still young. And I think it's set somewhere between 23, 24, 25,000. Great. But I said to my wife, I was like, unless that's the route we're going to go, should we, and this is my question for Joe, should we close the account, take the 10% hit from the IRS, so $2,500, set aside whatever money we're going to need in taxes because it'll be taxable income, and then take the rest of it and figure out how we want to invest it, whether that's purchasing a property, whether that's, hey, somebody needs, Joe says to me, hey, there's a business, you want to go 50-50 on it, we'll throw each throw 10 grand in and see what happens. I want to figure out what to do, but I know you have to have money to make money. And so that was one of our conversations. Do we do that? Do we just let it sit there and build up money from other areas to invest with? So thoughts on that initial question.
All right. So for the first thing is that there is the evidence is that there's a lot of anxiety tied to money and especially in big quantities of money. So I would suggest first a little bit of detachment exercises about, you know, if that's the biggest decision, if you're having hesitation, there's going to be a reason for it. You need to search for.
Oh, I don't have any hesitation.
Oh, is that you? So there's two people in this. And this feels like a dispute resolution session, right?
No, we talked about it. And her whole thing was she feels nervous about it because she doesn't understand what I'm trying to do with it. And I explained a little bit and she goes, okay. She's like, I trust you, on this, but I don't understand. So that makes me hesitant. So, you're saying, some detachment exercise, but I think there's also some information. Is there like a spot where people who are looking to invest, is there like, you know, investment.com somewhere, like, you know, a website, right. Well, that's going to give you 101, 102.
I don't like outsourcing this kind of stuff. If you're either going to do this, right, and you're going to get an understanding, or you're going to let somebody else do it and let their brands go to work for it. And what you're doing is you're letting brands work for you. Right. Outsource this deal. Now, do I wish more people would take more advantage of their own stuff? Absolutely. Bring it in house. But you have to make sure that the bucket that you're about to put it in is equal or better than the one you're taking it from. And right now, they're smarter than you, and it's better kept there.
That's
so
good.
What you need to do is take a smaller scale version of that and practice the decisions that if you lose it all, it's not that one over there. Yeah. It's this one over here. And it's just like anything else. Like we do it in, if we can make use of $100, then we can make use of $1,000.
Joe.
Yes, sir.
That reminds me of a scripture.
It does.
We didn't get that last time. We didn't.
I know.
The scripture it reminds me of is, you know, to the idea behind don't despise the day of small beginnings. And, you know, to whom, you know, God is able to trust with little, he'll give much more to. It's the parable of the talents there. Not an exact quote, but that's basically what Jesus says. The guy comes back and says, you know, take the one who buried his and didn't risk anything on it and give it to the one who had more, because, you know, you took yours and you multiplied it. You did well with it. So you're saying, hey, in the beginning here, as you're learning, we're not throwing a Hail Mary. We're not going to chuck 30 grand into Bitcoin and go, let it ride.
Exactly.
You know? This is not red and black.
It will not be a blessing. Yeah, even if you win, it's not going to be a blessing.
Exactly. But what you're saying is, got to do the research. Got to play it slow.
Yes.
And we're going to think through this before, and then once we're feeling good about some things and we're feeling like we have some confidence and we're moving in the right direction, then we can talk about that.
The normal mentality is like, well, if I'm poor, you know, I'm making bad decisions, but if I was rich, I'd make all good decisions. Right. It's just not the case.
No, every person who wins the lottery, I mean, just take a look. I mean, how many go bankrupt and how many you know, make awful decisions financially.
It's a practice like anything else. And that's why it felt like when I was giving the advice last week that it was exactly opposite of what I should, you know, be giving. Yeah. But this is you versus you. And the money 100%. Really isn't as important as you and your relationship with money. If you've got a terrible relationship with money, we're going to exacerbate it if we put more volume on it.
So I take $500.
Yes.
And take that $500 and I want to start figuring out Bitcoin and stocks. Where should I start? Who, you know, what's your go-to YouTube? Do you have a,
my first deal is when I want to get into a new investment, which I did. There's a couple of these little altcoins and I paper traded them. I pretended that I put money into them and I took a spreadsheet and I tracked what it would do over a period of time without there actually being any dollars involved.
Okay.
And I did that over a period of maybe, you know, 30 days. And if my paper one was great on the other side, maybe the $500, it's time to get that in there.
So back in 2017, I decided everybody was talking about Bitcoin and everybody's talking about crypto and it's going to be great and it's going to be all these things. And so I had a couple buddies who were like, you got to get in now. It's about to skyrocket. Right. And I bought when I think Bitcoin spiked to like $20,000 in 2017. And then
and
it
you
came
bought,
back down.
You bought
oh,
it
I
top.
Bought at the height of that, bro.
Yes.
And I thought, man, this is going to be great. And then it started coming down. So then I took it and I just, my buddy was like, you got to buy this coin. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Now it was only a couple $100. Right. I was in it with like, if I lose it, I lose it. But you know, if I hit, you know, like almost in that sense, like where people go and, you know, put money in on stocks or whatever. And they're just, you know, a Hail Mary, like we talked about, rather than the incremental, hey, I'm making an investment in something I understand and something that's important. So what I ended up, you know, doing is I bought these two coins, but I signed up so early on. I'm sure you're familiar with Binance.
Okay.
So Binance was a global kind of crypto deal. And I signed up for it and I traded on it out of Coinbase. You had to take your stuff from Coinbase in to Binance. And you could buy all the like altcoins and the small coins. And it was the only way to do it because at the time, Coinbase, you could buy Bitcoin and Litecoin. I think that was it.
Right.
And everything else, you didn't have any of the smaller coins. So we traded in there and then it was fun for like a month or two. And I was like kind of learning and it kind of petered out there in January, February of 2018. And then I just forgot about it. And I was like, you know, and so as my wife and I started talking about investing, I was like, what coins did I buy again? So I'm looking and I'm like, oh, I was like, that coin's still around. I wonder if I made any money or whatever. And I don't remember how many shares I had. So I go to log back in. And now they have a US version of Binance and a global one. And the global one, I can't log into because I have a IP address that's
different.
That's US. Okay. And so I collected all this information. I now have to contact them this week because I put, you know, a couple hundred dollars in there, and I want to see, you know, what it made. But hey, maybe I can do this and I can make a bunch of money real quick. Wouldn't that be cool? But now what I'm talking about doing is, all right, when I'm 60, I want to have, you know, put my money into stuff that I believe in and want to put my money into stuff that's going to bring a return, so that not a return next week, but hey, we're going to do this incrementally. We're going to learn, we're going to grow over time. So what you're saying is track some of the stuff that you like. That's a good way to do it.
Okay.
Do you have any of, do you have a book or a YouTube thing, or how did, when you started into stocks and some of this stuff, even crypto, because I know you mined crypto mm-hmm. a bit and you got your experiment getting ready to go here.
Right.
How do you research that? Do you do that all raw for yourself and so you plug it in, or?
The stuff that goes on, like you were led into Bitcoin because it was at all time highs. Yeah. And so it was really, everybody's talking about it because, you know, by the time you learn about it, it's people made money, and it's pretty much cool that it leads you there, but
yeah.
Now's probably not the best time to, you know, to pull that trigger. But when you're investing in something that's like going down for 10 months, it's a little bit harder of a sell to like bring your buddies that like, hey, this thing, I got $20,000 invested and it's worth 10 right now. Right. Yeah. You're like, going to wait on that one.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But so that kind of stuff, that kind of stuff leads me to it, to learn a little bit about it. But what you said earlier, which is, you know, cash your stuff out, to put some cash aside. So when you are presented with something that's awesome,
yeah.
that you have liquid cash to be able to do something about. You know how many opportunities I couldn't do anything about because I was overinvested in crap that I did not care about, yeah. only because I thought I had to be making money and churning through that. And I deprived myself of those ones that I really loved.
Well, I know you don't like to keep liquid cash around because cash depreciates in value. It's terrible.
Please
to stick
don't
it in
do
the
it
bank.
Right now.
yeah, seriously. So when you have cash, do you look for business, real estate, stocks, or a combination?
I would say the easiest place to park it is going to be stocks. Okay. Just over the period of time, I don't think it gets hung up there, you know, where it used to be, man, stocks were, you know, sure. it was a risky proposition, but now when you compare it to like Bitcoin, it's like, oh, they're rock solid.
Yeah.
but you got to look at it like an inflation is probably going to burn you about 4%. So when you're moving stuff around, if your risk is more than 4%, then being in cash and serving the consequence of inflation is probably your better bet. So
when you say 4%, because this was a conversation my wife yeah. and I had, you know, there's a couple different types of currency. You have the fiat currency, the government backed yes. currency. And government-backed currency tends to depreciate, you're saying, at about 3 to 4%.
Yeah, they inflate it. It's a natural tendency of how they issue.
So that means if I have $100 in January, next January, it's only going to be worth about $96.
Correct.
Is that,
yep.
that what you're saying?
That's your loss, yeah.
So you take about a $4 loss on every 100 per inflation. Now, that could be a little more, a little less. Depending.
Yeah, it's an average over the right. course of 20 years. So, I mean, that's
right. But what people don't understand, when you stick it in the bank and you're like, oh, I get 1% interest, you're not making money. You're actually losing money.
Losing less.
Yeah, you're losing less. So then you have, I heard one guy say you have God's currency, stuff that's never going to go away,
right.
your gold, your silver, your real estate, et cetera. He went down a whole list of them. And those are hard assets.
Right.
The idea that I can buy a piece of property and it can cash flow me rent. It can cash flow me a business. It can all of that. And if I get into a pickle, I can sell it. So those are good. When you say the fiat, the cash government backed currency, don't hold on to it. Should people be taking it, putting it in their mattress, or they need to be putting it into something, is what you're
yeah,
saying?
Yeah. If you have a big one, like you have 25,000 that's sitting around and you have it sitting in cash waiting for an opportunity, you go to a financial advisor and say, hey, this is sitting here because I'm either going to cover an emergency of some kind, or if an opportunity comes, I need it to be liquid mm-hmm. super quick. So don't put me in something that's going to take me a year to liquidate.
Like a 5-year CD,
right?
Or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. You don't
right?
want to do that. Even if the interest rate is awesome, like you don't, all you want to do is not lose 4%. So if you go to somebody and say, hey, I can get you 5%, you can get your money back within like 15 days of you telling me to sell. And, you know, go. And so totally, I would totally do, because that just keeps you at even. And even like, even at 3%, if it's not a big amount, you're not losing that much. But I just
yeah.
hate the fact
yeah.
that I'm not, it's not in something that's making me money. It's sitting there losing ground.
Right. So give me percentages, because I don't know how much of your financial information you want to put all over the internet. How much percentage of your cash do you keep on hand liquid? Do you keep 10%?
50%. I do 50% investments, and I make sure that I have cash to back that at 50%.
Okay. So 50-50, you think that's a pretty wise average?
It's a little heavy. It's just the way that I do things. It's complementary to it. I probably wouldn't have quite that much in cash.
So that means if you have 100,000 invested,
yes,
you're saying you have 100,000 in cash.
Yep.
Okay. So with that 25,000, you're saying I should probably keep half of it in cash and put the other half in investments once I'm.
Yeah. And so the way that it works, like if you did parse that out and you're like, I'm going to take 10 out of my 20.
Yep.
And that's going to be my investment money. Then you're going to subdivide that even further, where you're going to take a portion of it and put it, and then maybe 50%, you're going to put it into something that is the least risky. And then you're going to make
Give me an example. What's something that's not like risky?
Mutual fund. You throw it in a mutual fund that's averaged X amount of percent. You go get 10% on the top 50%. And with the lower 50%, maybe you keep 25% on hand and 25% into something speculative. So if my speculative 25% makes me 100% or 1,000% gains, right? I don't have to have as much of it as the 10% in the other 50%.
Gotcha. So talk about those non-risky ones, like a mutual fund. So how does a mutual fund work, and how does some of that stuff,
if you go to a financial advisor, give them a block of money, they'll spread your money out in different sectors, depending on where things are, you know, where the marketplaces are. Mm-hmm. So, and a mutual fund sort of gives you a small version of that, where smart people move money around within a mutual fund that divest it in different versions of, you know, maybe we're going into a season where retail goods are going to be high versus technology versus commodities. Mm-hmm. And then so your money is intelligently moving around and you still own it. You don't have to do anything with it. You don't have to trade out of it. And it gives you a little bit of diversity without doing anything.
Are you required to hold those for lengths of time with them? Or?
For tax purposes, yes. But again, that's another tax person or accounting person's deal.
Yeah. Now, that is all fascinating. Again, I'm gobbling up information right now. And like I said,
let me tell you this, tax implications never enter into it. I don't like hold a stock beyond what I want because I don't want to pay the capital gains on it. Right. I trade when I want to trade. And if there's taxes, you know, if the taxes are your biggest expense, you are doing it wrong.
Do you find it better long-term investments for you to put into real estate and businesses because you can be more hands-on in those? I know you 100%. Like to have your hands.
Okay. If I were to say, like when I'm looking at, let's just say I had an extra $10,000, right. I'm like, hey, where am I going to make? It's not necessarily about returns, right? Okay. To a point it is, but it's like, okay, how much time am I going to have to spend nurturing this investment? If I've invested in me, I got hands-on, it's giving me my biggest return. That's the one I'm going to choose usually. If I invested in real estate, like I got to do this and I got to pay maintenance and taxes and I got to mess with it a lot and I'm bound to make 40% of a return. Like, which am I going to choose? The one that's going to take a bunch of time that's just a plot of land? Or am I going to do the hands-on one where I get control of it, but it has the most lucrative versus one I give you the money. I don't have to mess around with it. I only get 5%, but it's not going to cost me any time. And those are my options. And at different periods of my life, there's not a noble one and there's not an evil one in that.
Sure,
mix.
Sure. But I just know how much you like to get the dirt in your hands and squish it and do something with it. So that totally makes sense. And as you look, there are a bunch of people on TikTok and elsewhere that, you know, are making a killing on the real estate side of things. They talk about Airbnb. They talk about the ability to, you know, they get these 4 and 6 unit, you know, apartment buildings and, you know, they put their stuff out there and I'm like, wow, you know, that's really cool. And they make it sound like I paid like $3 for this and I get, you know, tens of thousands of dollars every month. And I like they're selling it in a way on TikTok to get followers. But there's got to be more to it. And you mentioned with the real estate, when you're purchasing a piece of real estate for people that are like, I don't know about the stocks or the crypto stuff, but real estate sounds interesting to me. What do you look for in a piece of real estate that you're investing in?
So for every person you see on TikTok that like made it on real estate and got these unbelievable returns, that's like the 5% sliver. It's the same ones that tell you they made money on this XYZ stock. You know, they lost a bunch on ones that they didn't pick the right one at, you know, certain times. So it's one of those things where I don't think any of them offer any more value than any other. It's whatever one you really like. I like owning property. I like owning businesses. I like owning stuff that I have a say in. So like when, you know, we have a chance to buy a couple of commercial buildings, and I've always wanted to do commercial development. Yeah. I've never owned a physical commercial piece of property, and where it is, where you have an appreciating asset, where you have something right. that's physically owned and it gets more valuable over time. And it also can cash flow things where you can put people in there and they can do stuff and they can pay you rent on that piece yeah. of property. So it's a double deal, right? I want to own something that's going to increase in value and I want some cash flow out of the deal. Where residential is sort of that, where you can buy a home that appreciates in value, but you might get some dude in there that you won't have to like be mean to and do some rough stuff. I don't want anything to do with that.
So it's interesting. So Sam and I, our experience, we bought a condo when we first got married. We lived in it for like 5 months and then we moved. The condo was underwater within 5 months. It was 2009, to give you an idea. So we to put it in context, we bought the condo for $150,000. 5 years later we had to short sell it, and I think it was like $69,000 is what we had to say. It was rough, bro. It was rough. But in 5 years we were able to keep a renter in there. Now, we never set out to be landlords, and thank God my mom has been a property manager for the last 20 years and did finances and did commercial properties, actually, a lot of them. So she was able to step in and write the lease for us, and she was able to do some of that stuff. And she used a lot of her connections to, you know, a plumber to fix this and somebody to do that. And they, you know, they owed her whatever. And so she would get pro bono work for us, which was huge for us because we didn't get in it to make money. Right. We bought it because we were like, oh, we're going to live here. And then, nope, no, we're not. And we were stuck because we would have taken a huge loss. We didn't have the money to cover anything on the closing end of things to just get out of it after 6 months. And so we were like, well, I guess we'll get a renter. And that worked for a while. And then we had one renter, and New Jersey's where the property was. And it favors the renter hugely compared to the landlord. And so we got in a spot where we had to file the paperwork for eviction. And by the time our, you know, the last month's rent was spent, and then we're dipping into savings to pay for stuff. We just got in a tough spot with it. And, you know, thank God we were able to balance it out. And, you know, my in-laws were very gracious through the whole thing, you know, and helping us with some stuff. But at the end of the day, that experience was like, makes my wife be like, I don't know if I ever want to own a piece of real estate, you know, kind of property again, and do the renting on a, residential side. But you know, watching the Airbnbs makes me go like, well, could we buy a vacation home somewhere and then rent it out, and what would that take to do? And you know, I'm asking those type of questions because it's like, well, if we found one in a spot that we wouldn't mind going to, we can have 2 weeks and we don't have to pay for vacation when we go. That would be great.
Right. Okay. So let me profile you first, because this is what I don't think many people do, where they compare themselves against people who are doing something, but they're not that person. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you were to take somebody who's really good at selling cars and they're making a huge killing, and then you try to go sell cars, you're like, oh, they sold cars because of who they are and what 100%. They're capable of doing.
That's good.
Investments kind of work the same way. Okay. So I'm a data-driven spreadsheet guy. I will watch data over a long period of time and be able to fairly accurately predict what's going to happen based on what's happened in the past. Right. Mm-hmm. So when I buy things that I can see patterns in and gauge it against something, that's my forte. If you're not a data-driven person, then you got to find out what you are and then see what complements what you naturally are. So for instance, like I think this was Dave Ramsey that said it, like most of the money that's being made is bought at, or made at the buy, not the sell. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And so sitting around with $50,000 in your hand, waiting for something that gets served up to you versus saying, I have this and I want to buy something, so I'm going to go out market, play market price, and then wonder why when I broke even that I had hassle on my hands. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and they said like during the real estate crash, 2008, 2009, all of that, some people made a killing because they were sitting there with liquid and they went in and bought houses and condos for pennies on the dime and were able to turn around and sit on them, flip them, generate, you know, cash flow and all that.
So let's profile you. I want to do this. Like, you don't care about a little light on you.
Let's do it.
Okay. So for real estate, when you're talking about like condos and vacation homes, you got two choices. So you pick up a property that you find a good deal on. Mm-hmm. Real estate's really hot right now. There's a lot of competition. So chances are you're going to pay a little bit over premium, asking price and a little bit over market value. the bubble's going to pop at a certain point. So you're primed for that same kind of scenario where it's going to go. A lot of people are going to find themselves underwater if they purchase at this level. But then you're picking out where things should be right now, so that if they return to where normalcy is, like my spreadsheet can tell me where it's going to come down to under normalcy. So I would already predict where I'm buying at, where you're counting your money out, kind of a thing. So now, are you good at fixing things?
No.
Okay, so let's just say you bought property and you're a contractor and you can do repairs yourself.
Right.
You can make a premium because your competition is going to have to pay a contractor. You are a contractor, so now you have an advantage. Let's just say you know a realtor and the realtor calls you up and says, hey, Tuck, I'm going to let you know this thing came on the market. Nobody else knows about it. Now you have an informational advantage where somebody's feeding you stuff that nobody else is getting. Do you have that? Yeah.
I mean, I know people.
Okay.
Relationships are one thing I have.
Right. Now, banking, where you have an access to cash that's cheaper than everybody else. So your advantage is going to be in that you have an informational, you have a relational, or you have a financial advantage. If you don't have any of those advantages, then that's probably not where I'm going to profile you. All right. Let's just say that you come through idle cash on a regular basis. You have a cash flow system that you usually have $50,000 sitting at any given time, and it sits there for 6 months. So you just want to like offload it somewhere, take advantage of it sitting idle, and then put it back when you're done. If that's your gig, then that's an advantage where not everybody has that cash flow advantage. You do. So again, you could keep going through scenarios and saying, okay, pretty much everybody that's listening to
what this, hand have I been dealt? Let's play that hand.
Yes. And you probably, because you've never thought through it, you never created that advantage in anything. You're playing at a disadvantage because you're lined up in the same line as a billion other people all trying to do and buy and sell the same thing.
Boom.
Okay. So that's it. So I hate to talk you out of it.
Right now I'm in like information gathering mode. So I'm not talked into anything. I just, I know that as I am consuming this, everybody's got their niche. And so you got the people that are crypto, and you got people that are stocks, and you got people that talk about Roth IRAs and mutual funds and some of that stuff. And then you got people that are all real estate, and then people that are business. And so, you know, like I saw one, they profiled this one young lady, and she owns three laundromats, and she's like, it takes me 2.5 hours a week. We do this, this, and this. It costs me this much money up front. And I go around and I collect all the money. And I take it to the bank. That's what I do every week. And I'm like, I could do that.
All right. So we know where you're at then.
Right.
So now you get to pick something that you would really love to do. If like there was nothing in your way, there was no obstacles, what would you pick? And that's where you start developing that advantage, because it takes a while to get that advantage. And then before you exercise it, because, you know, once you exercise it, there's money to be made, but you don't have the advantage.
Right.
So what would you do if there were no objections in any of those other departments? Financial objection, relational objection, informational objection.
I think I'd probably go the avenue of the stocks and crypto stuff, simply because I think looking at the other deals, as cool as real estate would be, I don't think I have the time or energy or wherewithal to deal with cleaning people and all the other stuff that comes along with that. As I know from the church, you know, you got to plow the lot, and you got to, you know, there's just a bunch of those things. Now, whether my wife wants to tackle that's a different question. She's much more detailed and organized, and probably would be able to line some of that stuff up. But if you're telling me I have to pick right now, that would be I would probably go the crypto and stocks side of things.
Okay, so let me reclassify it so that you're not pigeonholed in doing one thing.
Okay.
So what you're saying is that you would like to invest in somebody who's going to create something, right?
Yeah.
Because when a company takes your stock, they're actually investing it into growth, and you pick ones that grow big, and then your investment becomes more. So if you take a coffee shop down the road and you invest that same 10,000 and they grow their things by the same proportion, you could just as easily buy donuts and coffee shop as you could Apple or Tesla.
Right.
Absolutely. And so that's what, when you start developing your advantage, you have to develop the ability to sniff out growth potential in things, right? So if you can walk up to somebody and say, that dude is going to do big things, or that idea is going to provide big things, that's what you're seeking out. The commodities version of that is just joining the parade that's heading towards 10% revenue. And it's just might as well give it to somebody else.
Just about making money.
Exactly.
Gotcha. So deciding whether, all right, is this about launching a business? Is this about getting your hands dirty, or is this just about making 10% on your money?
Exactly. Yeah. And that the version of, I mean, there's going to be work involved no matter what it is, sure. But the advantage that you gain is like when you start digging through innovators or mm-hmm. scientists or people who, you know, take, what's that called when you get not the copyright, the patents. People file patents. Like you go through there and you sniff out like who's filing patents and where are they heading and where's their logic going. And you're like, okay, I can plot that these companies are going to do things in artificial intelligence and software development and medicine and whatever.
This is so interesting. So, because most people right now that, like I said, most people are living paycheck to paycheck. They're not in a spot where they have $50,000 sitting around that they can throw into something. And, you know, they're hearing people on TikTok and YouTube and elsewhere talking about crypto and stocks and real estate, like I was saying, and they think, well, like, I'm just going to take, you know, $5,000 and we're going to chuck it in there. We're going to do that sort of stuff. And so what I'm hearing Joe say is take your time, learn whatever area. You got to pick something you're passionate about and you got to consume it. Yes. So that you know exactly what you're dealing with. And then once you have the confidence with that, and you can play a little bit with small amounts, but know that, hey, I might lose this because this is about
learning. You're going to lose. This is an educational donation.
Okay.
Donation. So I took $200 and I bought Doge, right?
Okay.
And I don't know why I did it. I want to learn about the fluctuations. You see the chart, you see that it goes these gangbuster balloons, and I got $200 riding in on it. Right. The day one, day five, day 10, it was worth like, you know, 189. I'm like, okay, well, I'm watching this thing and this was a pump and dump deal and I want to watch it. I'm in it. I want to see the pump and dump. And it stayed right around where it is, but it's causing me to watch deeper and just to read deeper. And I now have a personal, it's not a lot of money, but psychologically your brain doesn't care whether or not it's a little or a lot. And so like, if it loses, there's no pressure and anxiety, make it go wide. And that's two dinners out. Right.
Yeah. Well, it depends on where you go.
Yeah, that's right.
Aquapazo, that might be one.
Right.
So then let me push this then a little bit. Yeah. So let me go into the crypto. Obviously, you're in the tech industry. Do you feel like crypto is the future? Do you think, you know, some people are, you know, think all the altcoins are worthless and just invest in Bitcoin? What are your thoughts on that industry? I know you're doing an experiment here. With it. So I'm sure you have some opinions on, you know, is Amazon going to accept payment from Bitcoin at some point? Like I said, is that sort of stuff going to happen?
Okay. I'm going to try not to get too technical in this explanation, but I have to get a little bit technical.
All right, I'm in.
So I do not think the final iteration of how we're going to use Bitcoin has even emerged yet.
Okay.
So even with as high as it is as a coin, I don't think it's going to be a coin in the end.
Okay.
I think this is just Joe speaking that it's going to be a very secure transportation vehicle for other information that poses as a coin. And so crypto is the future because nobody trusts their government. I don't care whose government you are.
Yeah.
Right. And we can say, you know, the United States has in comparison to other countries, we have a pretty predictable government profile, pretty predictable financial and currency profile. But if you really look at it from a mathematical, I mistrust it. I mistrust my politicians and I mistrust the financial system. Unsustainable.
So why should people trust crypto? It's a conversation. My wife is like, I don't understand. I don't get what is it?
Okay.
How are we mining it?
So here's the reason.
Digging it up in the backyard over there. Like where is it?
So I watch people like when there is a bad thing that happens in the part of the world where, you know, Bob Smith in the middle of Africa somewhere, there's a warring tribe going to totally kill the government. And he's holding paper dollars in his hand. He's like, this is worth something today. But after this war, I don't even know if the government's going to be here. And I don't know if this is going to be worth anything. And this is everything I have. Well, I watched that dude push it into Bitcoin as a holding thing because it's not owned by that government. Right. So other countries that have terrible systems, they're using it as a lifeline to preserve that kind of value. So then they can move to a different country or after the war, then they can bring it back into the currency that they have right now. But if they didn't have that, they'd have nothing. I mean, Iraq, after the wars that happened in the 90s, they had money that was in the street that nobody even bothered picking up because it was freaking worthless.
Wow.
Right. What if that was your money? And you're just like, you know, what do I do? So Bitcoin is a decentralized mechanism that's used as currency. So nobody owns it. It's not on one single server. Nobody has enough control over it to be able to hack it, scam it, scheme it, control it. So you lose a transaction, it's on you. I've actually had a computer that had coins on it. The computer died and there's not a customer service line that I can call up and say, hey, I need my Bitcoins back. If you're stupid, you lose coins because it's decentralized. There's no authority mechanism over those coins.
So that's exciting in the sense that there's no authority, but that's also terrifying too.
If you're stupid, you lose. Yes.
Yeah. There's no like 1-800, please help me.
Exactly. And that, a lot, if you ask any customer service rep, I mean, consumers are not brilliant when it comes to how they spend their money or what they happen. And would you like to have all of your stuff in Bitcoin, make some kind of mistake where somebody rips you off and there's not like somebody that's going to track down the people because it's anonymous. Like there's no way to track them down.
Yeah.
Hmm. I just make fun of every consumer in the United States and maybe even the world. I'm sorry, everyone.
Well, so you get these Bitcoins and they're kept where?
So they're digitally in an address. So you create a thing called a wallet that takes ownership of a sort of like a encryption address. And okay. Then it, when you consume,
and that would be through something like a Coinbase or.
Yeah. So they're doing all the heavy lifting for you. Like right. You don't need a Coinbase to have a wallet. You just okay. Have to have a piece of software that has your encrypted addresses.
Interesting. Right?
Dangerous because you're on the hook for that.
Yeah.
Coinbase, they're on the hook for that. So they end up being your be smart people.
Oh, okay.
And that's why they charge what they do because they're doing your heavy lifting.
Gotcha. What do they charge?
Not much. I think when you buy and sell, it's maybe like 0.4% or something. Oh, okay. It's not a lot.
Cool. So if you're going to get into Bitcoin, because like there, you know, you're hearing Aaron Rodgers has been in the news for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons is he put a portion of his contract extension yes. in Bitcoin. Tom Brady gave somebody a Bitcoin. And are you seeing that emerging as like a future transaction piece though? Or I know you're saying it's going to include information and other stuff, and it hasn't even emerged how it'll be fully used yet. But is it going to replace dollars, I guess, is my question.
No, it's not going to ever replace dollars.
Okay. So you'll always have government-backed currency at some level.
Yes. Okay. And it 100% can be tagged to Bitcoin. So like currencies moving in one direction as an inflationary currency because they can print more of it. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin's a deflationary currency because there's actually being less
limited amount.
Yeah. Less put into the marketplace. So it has to become more dollar value expensive in order to support the network. So the same tagline from 2015 to today, it's either going to be worth millions of dollars per coin or it's going to be worth zero. Right. And there's going to be no in between. I have a spreadsheet that I started in 2015 that said okay. every 4 years what the coin would be like. And it stayed on track since the very inception. Right. Wow. It's been a little bit ahead. Like right now, I think it's supposed to be about 45,000 yeah, and like it's 61. Like 65,000. Yeah. But it's about to do a halving in a year and a half or so, which means that it's going to be about 70,000. It's just like getting there a little ahead of schedule.
Hmm. Interesting. So if you're into Bitcoin, what's yes. the altcoins, right? Everybody talks about Bitcoin, but you have all these other smaller coins yes. and stuff like that. How does somebody start their own coin? Like, can Joe start yeah, like a Danye coin?
You can.
How do you do that? Why would people buy them? Like, there's the Dogecoin you mentioned earlier, yes. and Shiba has been a big one everybody's been talking about in the last week or two.
Some of the math behind Bitcoin makes it extremely survivable. But it's a little bit inconvenient for how we traffic money, right? Okay. So like there's a 10-minute transaction delay between when you spend money and when it can be verified. So you go to the mall and you want to buy a sweater and you scan your Bitcoin wallet, right? And it takes 10 minutes for you to get an approval. That's extremely inconvenient for sure. high volume, high speed transactions. But if you're sending money to England, right? And there's a 10% wiring fee on $1 million versus it would cost you about, I don't know, $5 to send the same amount of Bitcoin between the two, but it would take 10 minutes. Now it's less inconvenient
sure.
because the cost came down off. So there's an applicable utility to this. So let's just say the credit card processors use Bitcoin as their infrastructure to transact send these transactions, but then they put a little altcoin on top of it that had a higher transaction rate. So maybe every 30 seconds, you lose some of the security because it's happening a little bit faster. So more things can go wrong, but it's predicated on the real transaction underneath. So these little altcoins, think of them, they're like riding on Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Now they're not directly tied to it, but they have some convenience issues where maybe they're less secure, but faster, or maybe that they hold less things, but they're, you know, more malleable. And so the Dogecoin is like, somebody were like, okay, well, I have access to this open source software because it's all open source. I'm going to make this little change over here and a little change over here. Now it becomes a coin with a whole different set of characteristics. Mm-hmm. maybe it applies for someone buying in retail or maybe ice cream shop or debit card or whatever. So that's the quick
version. So it's not like this. The way I was thinking about it in my head is it's like, you know, you have the yen, you have the pound, you have the dollar. It's not like different types of currency like that. This is very different.
Yes. So the different currency, they all fundamentally are the same thing, right, but just riding on different economies.
Correct.
Where Bitcoin and Litecoin and Doge are all completely different animals that serve different purposes for different kinds of transactions.
Interesting. And so they have different software behind them.
Yes.
That allows them to do different things. And you're saying some of them process things faster, some of them are slower, some of them are designed for certain markets.
Yeah. And so like you, because so many people can work on them and you could bring out your own coin, innovation curve happens really quickly because Joe Smith can just put together his own coin. Now, the problem is we haven't really put together what Bitcoin's going to be. So all those other altcoins are even less, you know, secure, not secure. They're less, they have less of a future where I can barely see what Bitcoin's going to be at $2 million a coin with 10-minute transactions. You'd give me like a Dogecoin that's almost like a drinking buddy's joke. And like, is somebody going to really be putting some important stuff into it?
Interesting. Well, this is fascinating. And right now I'm like I said, I'm trying to gobble up all the information that I can. And I'm going to step into this. We open our account tomorrow, so I'll have to get with you and we'll
can't wait.
We'll start talking about how to do that. I've downloaded a couple of the apps that I know you recommended, Coinbase being one of them.
Yep.
Since I used it before, I already have it set up. I just have to add a new payment method with my new account. But we should, I think, unpack this. Maybe we can have like a I don't know, you know somebody in finance. We should get somebody.
We could, yeah.
That'd be fun.
So do you want somebody who hates Bitcoin and that way we can kind of go? I mean, do you want someone who already
whatever. Knows? Somebody in real estate. Somebody like, if we got like two or three, we could sit in that back room.
Okay.
And let them, you know, like Shark Tank, like fight each other.
Over okay. That would be really interesting. A lot of fun.
And it would be interesting to see them play off each
other. And you know, we'd have to find someone like, there's a lot of people that won't go out because the reputation's in the financial. If you feel like you're a gambler, then your reputation goes that route. So we'll have to find somebody who's maybe playing a little bit in that, maybe got some reservations, and we could talk more on an academic level without hurt. I don't want to hurt anybody by having this conversation. Absolutely. You know?
I didn't even think that way. That's a good point. So, we're going to pick this conversation up. We won't be here Thursday, but we'll pick it up next week. And hopefully you enjoyed some of this financial investment talk. I know it was helpful for me.